Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, psychic, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio television talk show personality. She brings to the airwaves talented people from around the world who share their insights and experiences with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna.
Hi, this is Donna. Welcome. Welcome to an hour of mind power. But we're going to be sort of talking about something that's going to be bringing in a different aspect. And yes, it's a little bit associated with mind power, but it's personal experience that my guest, Tom Moore, will be sharing with us today. His recent publication, First Contact, Conversations with an ET, I've had Tom on my show before, and when I got this book, and I mentioned this to him just before we came on air, I said, Tom, this is really different from what you've written before, because he is a man that has developed a following called, and there's a gentle way, and it's called MBO. So we'll talk about that for a little bit. Tom, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me, Donna. Nice to be here. Hello to everybody out around the world.
Well, it's fabulous. Tom, you've been involved in the motion picture and the television industry for years. I know when I interviewed you before, MBOs were the topic, the focus of your previous publications, which is a very strong affirmation system for the most benevolent outcome. And that's what the MBO is an abbreviation for. When I got this material on ETs, extraterrestrials, I said, okay, Tom, you're going to have to explain to me what this is and how this actually came about in your life. And your book does do that. It was as recent as 2008, am I correct, when this association began? Tell us a little bit about this, and have you ever had an interest in this? Was this something that you said, oh, I really think there are extraterrestrials out there? What was it?
Oh, I've always felt there were, I mean, people that believe that humans are on the top of the heap and there's nobody else in the universe are sadly misinformed or short-sighted in understanding. So I'm like everyone else. I love a good science fiction movie. My company owns, I don't know, 60 or 70 or 80 science fiction movies that we license worldwide. Among a large library that we have. So, yes, I enjoy science fiction. So but this came about as quite a surprise, because one day I was communicating with my own guardian angel, who I call Theo, in my meditation, and we were discussing some ruins in Europe that were dating back to the Syrians, and he said, "Oh, you're going to be shown those one day by a Syrian." I said, "You meaning me personally, or you meaning humans?" And he said, "No, you personally." And so he said, "Would you like to speak to him? You know, he's tuning in to us." And that was a big shock to me, because I thought I was having this private conversation with my own guardian angel, and it's a party line. So I said, well, let me think of some questions to ask, and I'll get back to you. So a couple of weeks later, I had questions, and that's how it started. And I've asked hundreds of questions. It's a form of telepathy, if you will. And I firmly believe that when we go to the stars, either the whole crews are going to have to be telepaths, or they're going to have to be telepaths on board, because we'll be communicating with beings that don't perhaps make sounds, and we're going to have a way to communicate with them, and we're going going to do it by telepathy.
Tom, you said you were chosen to be one of 12 grassroots contactees.
Yes.
And there was a year given of 2007. Now, I'm going to ask you a very practical question.
Well, 2007.
Of what value is this? Now, I understand your relationship with Theo.
Right.
But why is this association so important? Is it, and I've talked with a number of people that have had some very profound experiences, and it's as if we're breaking through a major paradigm, huge paradigm, at a speed that I think for most people they're not even able to comprehend. They're so busy with living their everyday lives, and this is not a criticism by any stretch of the imagination. Why do you think that this is something that has become your job assignment? What was the reason for you being able to have this experience?
Well, first of all, it turns out that Antura, the being that I communicate with, who is an amphibian living on a water planet, is part of my soul cluster, soul group. And so, first of all, it was much easier for him to communicate with me than it would be some alien that I've never run across before. He has told me that we have had lives together before. The last life was actually in Atlantis, where he acted as one of my tour guides to help me move a bunch of people from Atlantis to Egypt, where we resettled 200 years before Atlantis finally sank into the sea. So that was our last life together, but he's had 800 lives on Earth. And so that was the first reason. Another major reason is that because I had been involved as an executive producer in low-budget movies and TV shows, I'm supposed to be the first person, along with my family, because my daughter has a degree in film, that will shoot a documentary on board this enormous mothership he's coming in with a crew of 850. And we're going to get to interview all these different beings, which include, everything from bird beings, insect beings, reptilians, plant beings. All of these are, and other kinds of forms of humanoids. So it's going to be a busman's holiday, as I call it, where I'm actually going to be working.
Individuals like Steven Spielberg, when he put together the movie Close Encounters of the Third Kind, There was such an acceptance of this movie by the public. It was just literally, I'll use the word, devoured. It's as if people went into the movie theaters. I know I was one. And we're talking of, millions of people that have seen this. And even since then, I think, didn't the movie come out in the 70s?
Yes, I believe so.
He had the communication via sound in the movie. He had the telepathic communication included in this. And he was so farsighted in what he did. Gene Roddenberry with Star Trek. The physicists and scientists that have been on the writing staff of so many of these productions, that they either had experiences of their own or they had the thinking capacity to step outside the box and say, this is what we're going to be seeing. And I find that this has increased, that the production of these kinds of programming really have increased. And Star Trek today is just as popular, if not more so, than it was when it first came out. And all of the subsequent movies, people just seem to want to have more of this. But there's a level of responsibility. When I went through your book, there was a lot of information about your contact, Atura. And also, it brought to mind the movie Cocoon, and how people were contacted. They were, and then again, this was a movie, I don't know when that came out, that was in the 80s, but it was about intelligent people that wanted to communicate with others, and their lifespans were a lot longer than ours. Mm-hmm. And they made two movies with it. And at the end of the first one, all of them, excepting for one person, went off in the spaceship to find out about the other life. And then they had a sequel to it. But you look at this kind of thinking that keeps coming through over and over again. It's as if the psyche is being prepared for the average individual of that expectation that we're going to be opening up our minds and our lives and our experiences to much greater awareness than has ever been really even imagined before. But I would say it has been imagined by the Roddenberrys and the Spielbergs and the others.
Yes.
Ron
and I'll have two comments on that. Number one is that keep in mind that we all come from other planets. So as an example, I actually originated on that water planet. And I've been told that I was one of the first souls to ever have a life on Earth. So we all come from these other planets, so we have this knowing way back in our psyches about other planets, and we feel an affinity to that. A lot of science fiction writers have lives that are in the future, and then they come back and have a life and say, oh, here's what I imagine, now let's make it. So as an example, Jules Verne had mm-hmm. a life in the future where there were submarines, there were ships to the moon, and all this other stuff. And so then he went back and had a life where he wrote about it. So that comes into play, too. So you have two different things coming into play. People that have had lives where they remembered. Allah, as an example, take Star Wars. There really was a Star Wars. It was 2 million years ago, Earth time, 200,000 years ago, Universal time. And so there was a Star Wars. And it was the reptilians that decided they wanted to take over some planets for their resources and attacked out of the blue. And the Star Wars lasted for millions, lasted for thousands of years before peace was finally settled. Well, I mean, as an example, just in the last week or two, I received an email from a lady who had a dream about being on a planet and seeing spaceships in the sky and being very frightened. And I asked Gantura about it, and he said, she had been on a planet that was destroyed, and that's when she decided to have lives on Earth. And he mm-hmm. and he said, she's the first one that you've run across, but she will not be the last. And mm-hmm. he said, mm-hmm. and he said, Tom, he said, that Star Wars was very nasty. He said, your science fiction movies show a planet being blown up. What would actually happen is that they blow up the sun, and all the planets in the solar system would be destroyed with billions of beings. That's mm-hmm. that's how bad it was.
Mm-hmm. When you were talking with Antura, he describes, because you ask questions about their children and the education, and one of the points that he brings out is that his culture of people, that they do not stand for violence. They just absolutely abhor violence. It's just not something yeah. in their culture. And that when it comes to educating children, there is a way of, you might say, downloading information, and these children are in a capsule. Now, there is a movie, I don't remember the name of it, and it was done a long time ago, and I happened to come across it one day. I didn't pick it up, but I happened to come across it in a movie store. It's quite old, and the whole idea of education in a different way than we have today, but downloading information, was demonstrated in this movie. And when I was reading your book, I went, holy Moses, I wish I could remember the name of the movie, because it is something that's almost exactly like what Antura is describing. And he also said there are some children that didn't want to learn. They were to be, you know, to do other kinds of work. But,
well, I think he mentioned it in connection with learning to pilot a spaceship. Some kids mm-hmm. would have no interest in that, and other kids would, so they'd download the information about piloting a spaceship, and then they would start, you know, with little simple crafts, I guess.
Mm-hmm. But again, when I think of this old movie, and I go, my goodness, this movie was an animated movie, I believe. It was so far ahead of its time. So far ahead of its time. And here you are in your book describing certain things that Antura shares with you. But I found that the statement, an Earth experiment, Antura said that being an association with people on our planet, in our environment, it would be reintroducing negativity into their environment. And I found that quite interesting. I thought, well, why would you want to reintroduce that? If this is something where in a culture that aspect has been eliminated, what would be the value? What is it that they as a people, or he as a person speaking for his people, what would be the value of that?
Okay. The value is that the rest of the verse reached a level of rational that has leveled off.
Okay, Tom.
They're not, yes.
Tom, you were gurgling there for a minute, so something was interfering with your phone line.
Okay.
Go ahead and say what you were saying, because I'm sure my audience couldn't understand that. So if you would, repeat what you just said.
Okay. The rest of the universe has reached a level of development vibrationally where they're not increasing their vibrational levels of the soul, okay? They're at like 5.3, 5.4. I thought since we were just getting to the 5.000, the fifth focus, fifth dimension, whatever you want to call it, that they would be like 5.8 or 5.9. But they're, you know, here they are, societies that are over a billion, several billion years old, and they're still stuck at 5.3, 5.4. So what's going to happen is when we start introducing games to them, which requires a winner and a loser, that's negativity, but it's tiny bits of negativity. And so when we start introducing that first to the Federation planets, then their vibrational levels of their souls are going to start increasing again. And they're going to become our converts, missionaries, whatever you want to call them, because they're going to get so excited about being able to start increasing their vibrational levels, they will pass it all over the universe.
There is always, I think, a need for growth and development. And when I was reviewing your material, I thought, in a way, he is talking about a level of stagnation that they feel that they need to break through. And I think that this has been such a part of human evolutionary history, with all of what I call the hideous demonstrations of the worst side of humanity being in the process. But often those patterns for growth, development, occur because of something that shakes you out of a lethargic environment. There is some kind of a breakthrough that has to be done. It's almost as if there's a process here that needs to be experienced.
Yes, and that process is volunteering for the Earth experiment. So in other words, our souls, we're sitting around, our souls are having maybe a 500,000 lives right now all across the universe. They're much more powerful than we have realized, okay? But they're stuck like everybody else, or they were stuck like everyone else. So they volunteered for this Earth Project of having negativity introduced, in this case, very heavy amounts compared to what we're going to go back and introduce to these societies. But they were stuck, and so they volunteered and said, you know, we want our vibrational levels to start again, and if we have to go through this Earth experiment where we have to spend 600 or 800 lives on Earth in order to do it, then that's what we want to do. So they're very, I felt they were kind of brave souls, you could call it, for them to decide to do that.
The term explorer race was applied to those of us here on the Earth, and I think that that is very much inherent within the human character, contrary to some opinions on the part of other people. But I do think that especially America has always represented that, where we want to try something different. We want to move forward, even though we are at a point where we're going through our own level of stagnation at this time and being forced, due to upheaval, to change our trajectory, as you will. But you bring out information that he shares with you regarding magnetics, force fields, and then you brought up something about the Roswell incident. And I know my listeners are very familiar with this, but there was a metal alloy that was found that was just incredible. And it's somewhere. It's stored somewhere. This is something where they're very familiar with it. They're very familiar with a lot of these materials that have been developed and that they utilize themselves. They have their own kinds of radar, and this is something that, do you think eventually there's going to be more of an open conversation about this? Because there's been so many things that have been put under wraps.
Right. Well, of course, I'm saying it's going to happen starting in 2015 when the Pleiadians make the first public contact. So that's going to be the beginning. But keep in mind, as Antura says, they're going to spoon feed us. They are they're not going to open up the door on millions of years of advancement or technological expertise. We have to reinvent the wheel. They're not going to give us hardly anything. We have to figure out, because the creator of this universe believes that we will figure out better ways to do things than these societies that have been around for, you know, a billion or more years. And even Antura says, it's hard for us to believe that you'll be able to figure out anything new, but the Creator is very confident. So there you go.
There's also some information about cultures, and this Earth has been around, you know, for a few billion years. So the fact that the comment was made that Egypt was in place and a lot of things were happening in that part of the world over 500,000 years ago, and I find it so amazing. I just, in synchronistic flow with our interview today, last night, I'm watching something on television. I just happened to turn it on about undersea discoveries, cities that have been legends for thousands and thousands of years in India. They're discovering these ancient temples actually are underwater. There were seven of them. How old? I honestly don't think we know, but they have found that, yes, they did exist. There's only one temple still standing on land. This was on the History Channel just last night. And
right.
Then I have had interviews with people who have talked about traveling through space portals. And every time I get into these conversations, I just have to chuckle, because I think of the physicists and scientists that are on the staff of those writers for Star Trek. We talk about traveling through wormholes. We go through all of this, and we sit there watching and say, yep, that's totally possible. Yep, there's no reason why that can't happen. Yep, this is it. People will laugh and say, oh, this is make-believe, but it isn't. So this may be where the way we're getting spoon-fed is through the motion picture industry and through writers.
Partially, yes, in preparation for the real stuff, I think. And speaking of portals, I was surprised to hear that there are 60 portals on Earth. Now, Antura said, you know, some planets only have one. So that's how important we are in this Earth experiment to the rest of the universe, even, that we have 60 portals. And one or two of the portals actually go to another universe that's nearby, which I found really amazing, that we can see this other universe in our night sky, but we think it's our universe. And and it's a close by universe. And since the book came out, I've asked the question, well, are there any more universes that are adjacent to ours? And I was told there are two more, but they're far away.
Mm-hmm. Well, I just think there's so much out there. And I think that there is going to be the ships like Enterprise, like in Star Trek, and they will go into these different universes, different segments. And right. Time travel, I think people do it frequently without being aware of doing it. But I do think also that there is a lot that is required with education. And I think that this is something that as we, along with other people around the Earth, that are interested in going into outer space, I think it is something that we're going to be able to discover more and more of. And we're going to find, and I know I've experienced this since the 70s, that there are those people that are already totally cognizant of so many things, and yet they keep it very hush-hush. I remember being told by a scientist, his name was George Tuttle, and he was working for a major scientific firm. This man was a genius. He was so nondescript. And this man, I was in his office and I was seeing these pictures of space, and I can remember saying to him, this is just spectacularly beautiful. He said, oh, you have no idea. Nobody knows. Nobody knows. Because he had contacts with people that were involved in a lot of the NASA programs. And at the time I met him, he was in his 70s. So there's this awareness, and I just find it intriguing that you, being in the industry that you've been in, having this, I'll call it a gift, being brought to you, what is the biggest impact it's had on your life, Tom?
Oh, I don't know if it's had that much of an impact yet, because, you know, I sort of fly underneath the radar a little bit, and I've found, what's interesting is I've found that the people that are really into UFOs and everything have a really hard time accepting the idea that anyone can telepathically communicate with another being. They're sort of like, well, I've seen a UFO, or I've seen pictures, I believe in UFOs, but how can you possibly say that you communicate with an ET? That's beyond their understanding. And in some ways, they're just as rigid in their beliefs as someone that says, I don't believe in UFOs at all.
No, to me, telepathy is no big deal. To me, it's being able to utilize it more effectively. I think that then that takes training. We hear people that communicate with animals. There's a horse whisperer. There's all kinds of things that go on. And so it all depends, I think, sometimes on the language of communication. And your book, First Contact, Conversations with an ET, is really quite interesting, because I've known people that have gone through these experiences, and they each responded differently. But I do know that it had a tremendous impact on their thinking and their lives, because they realized there was so much more that they really had no understanding of. And they began a journey, and that journey changed their lives. Tom Moore, you also have a website called The Gentle Way Book. thegentlewaybook.com, thegentlewaybook.com, you have put out a couple of books called The Gentle Way, and this is related to MBOs, the most benevolent outcomes. They make for a fascinating read. You have a newsletter. And again, for those of you listening, I know this is unique and unusual, but there's a lot of things in life we literally know very little about. This is just another mind challenge. Tom Moore, thank you for being a guest today.
Thank you so much, Donna.
It's been my pleasure. This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break. We'll be back in just a moment.
Too many people become victims of frivolous lawsuits and scammers simply because they were unprepared. At Corporate Direct, we use the latest legal tools to help our clients of all sizes create a strategy to protect what is theirs. Asset protection is not only for the wealthy. Our strategies and tools are very affordable and practical. Give us a call at 1-800-600-1760 or go to CorporateDirect.com to see how we can help you. That's 1-800-600-1760 for CorporateDirect.com.
Amino Muscle Snack Time, the chewable nutrition that feeds your muscles. Amino acids are the building blocks of protein. When you exercise, muscle tissue naturally breaks down. This low-cal, chewable snack helps to reverse that process and won't pack on the pounds. You can chew a few tasty vanilla tablets or any one of their other flavors before or after physical exercise, right before bedtime or first thing in the morning to jumpstart your metabolism into gear for the day. Convenient to carry in a purse, backpack, or briefcase, they are a tasty snack for the person on the go. Firm, fit muscles, trim, healthy body. Sound good to you? Check out Amino Muscle Snack Time Chewable Nutrition by going to Amazon.com or SquatSponge.com. Tone up, trim up, and nourish your body to the fitness level you desire. Amino Muscle Snack Time Nutritional Tablets. Check out the information and order today. Go to Amazon.com or SquatSponge.com. Order now.
Hi, this is Donna. Welcome back. I'm opening up the phone lines, and you can give me a buzz if you'd like for me to light up your life with a little bit of insight. 888-627-6008. I wanted to share a story with you. This is about my mentor, and I know that so many times when we listen to interviews with people like Tom Moore, we think that they're fruitcakes mentally. No, they're not. They've actually had experiences. And I want to tell you about an experience my mentor had. Now, this goes back many, many years. And I was quite young when I first met her. And she had gone out to the desert. This was out in California. And she was out in Palm Desert, I think, and it wasn't developed at all at that time. She and her sister and a very, very close friend, they had a trailer. They put it, hitched it on the back of their vehicle, and they drove out there. And they spent, oh, I guess it was about 4 or 5 days out in the desert. Now, my mentor, her name was Gloria. When Gloria was there, something very unique happened. What happened was this. They were inside the trailer, and her sister, Yvonne, was, you might say, taken over, and I'll use the term, an energy. This energy chose to communicate with my mentor. They used Yvonne as the facilitation for that. Elizabeth was an observer of everything that happened. They had absolutely no way of knowing that this was going to occur to them. They were totally all by themselves out in the middle somewhere in Palm Desert. And what occurred was Gloria started having a conversation with this energy. And Yvonne apparently was aware of what was going on, and she was hearing it also. So she wasn't in what we'd call a trance, out of the body, totally unaware. She was aware of what was going on, and she had no control over herself whatsoever. This conversation went on, and according to my mentor, it stopped. Yvonne came out of it, and she was not a happy camper. She didn't know what happened to her, but all she knew is that this was not something that she ever wanted to happen to her again. But it did happen again. It happened again, and Gloria, who had this phenomenal mind, questioned, not unlike Tom Moore, questioning the personality that has come to him telepathically. Yvonne was taken over again, and the communication went on. Now, what happened after this very powerful experience with Gloria, Yvonne, and their friend Elizabeth? What occurred was is that Gloria, who at the time was in her 20s, she opted to go into the study of metaphysics and into astrology. When I met her, she was much older, and she was very, very gifted. She was a very powerful psychic. She really was very good at what she did. But she traveled a road that was very difficult because at her time, everybody thought she was totally insane. But it's as if her mind went into high drive. She couldn't get enough information. And at the time when this experience happened, there was very little in print about anything having to do with the intuitive level, being able to develop telepathically or anything like this. There was very, very little around her. Well, her sister Yvonne was so upset because of what had happened to her. She didn't want to have anything to do with her sister for years. She was very, very upset because she had no control at all. The friend Elizabeth ended up, she was so moved by the experience, she ended up moving to Tibet and becoming a lama. And she stayed there for years. The impact was so profound. Three women having an experience like this. And I can remember when I was told this, and I thought, that would have changed anybody's life. And how do you even begin to describe it to someone else? Very, very hard. And off and on through my years of work in the arena of mind skills, and working with the public as I do as a counselor, I found many people have had various experiences. And they're very hesitant to discuss it because they don't want to be thought of being ready for the loony bin. So many times there are things that occur to us that don't make any sense. And yet, if we're willing to explore, we might find that there's more information available than we imagine. And I know we always have those individuals that wish they could have the experience, so they make things up. But for those of us that have had experiences that have been very powerful, we know that this is real and that one day we're going to be able to break through our paradigms. But like with so many things, it takes time. It really takes time. And I think that if you study and you read and you're open, it doesn't mean you become a garbage dump for everybody's stuff, but you can ask questions and you explore. Changing paradigms when it comes to the understanding of mind, understanding of how we can make this world a better place, so many things, it's very difficult. And we are in a cycle right now where change is being motivated by necessity in so many ways. And it comes about because we have developed a level of communication that wasn't available so long ago. One of them, the internet radio opportunity. Look at how I'm able to communicate around the globe with a technology that would not have made this possible even remotely to the capacity that it is today, as recently as the 1980s, the 1990s. It's amazing how fast we're moving forward. However, at the same time, there needs to be understanding with it, and we have to be aware to think about things. And to be alert to the fact that we're going to be growing and expanding in ways that our grandparents maybe wished that they could do, but we actually are going to do. Aspects of learning, aspects of recycling, so many things that were never even considered by my grandparents. It just wasn't in their realm of life. Well, they're coming about today. They're coming about because, again, of necessity. And the old saying, necessity is the mother of invention, I think is a very true statement. It really does make a difference. And sometimes we have to go back into the past to be aware that there truly is nothing new under the sun. We've just recostumed it. And I think if you study East Indian history, you go into so many different cultural environments. There's a fascination, an awareness that much has been going on for a long period of time that we're finally becoming aware of. And why? Because of technology. When I was watching the film last night on the History Channel, and I was seeing these mini divers going into water depths that wouldn't have even been considered possible not all that long ago, but now it is. We have submersible submarines that are able to go down and do investigation in depths that couldn't be explored before. All kinds of things are being discovered. And it is absolutely, I think, wonderful. It makes us aware that we shouldn't put life in little boxes. We should be open to understanding things that have been around. And just because we didn't know about them doesn't mean they didn't exist. It's really fun. It's fascinating. And it just makes you aware that this world has a lot in it that we are going to have a real interesting time finding out about. And fortunately, we're in a position to document this and to pass it along, again, because of the wonderful aspects of technology. Donna Sebo here. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. That's right. It's only a phone call away, and it's toll-free to you, 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. eBay has been around for a long time, and I have in front of me some wonderful information about women that have been able to really generate some excellent, excellent income. And one of them has been a guest on my show, Lynn Drail. She has been a guest on my show. She's written fabulous books. She was called the Queen of eBay. And she started years ago. I think she started, back in 2001. And I remember when I got Lynn's material, her story was so interesting because she had a grandmother that was an antique dealer right here in the state of Washington. Her grandmother just had this phenomenal place. And when she passed away, Lynn was able to sell a lot of her things. eBay was coming into its own, and Lynn was right there, right on the cusp of dipping into it. And she said, just try doing something on eBay. She has just had the most wonderful experiences, and she has books on this that you can check out. But she said she makes $10,000 a month. Can you imagine? She does this consistently. She's actually made more than that. But this is the way she makes a living. And how she gets her items is she loves garage sales. She'll go out shopping. She knows how to utilize a camera. She's developed a system, which you can learn from her about. And she's just a wonderful gal. Absolutely wonderful. Look up her Lynn Drail, D-R-A-L-L-E is the spelling of her last name. These are some tips that she passes along. She said, always auction. Let people bid for your things first instead of setting a fixed buy it now price. And she said, don't sell yourself short. List your items at a price you'll feel comfortable selling them for. She typically starts her listings at $9.99 to ensure she profits on every item. And she has all kinds of things that she sells. Also, she says, dream big. If you're serious about making eBay your business, aim to build a large inventory. Now, that may not be something you're comfortable with, but she said she lists anywhere from 100 to 200 items at a time. And she said that is the best way to make a consistent income on eBay. Now, I can say Lynn Drail really knows what she's talking about. I've talked with a woman so many times. She is a great gal. I've never sold anything on eBay, but by golly, she knows her stuff. She really does. Donna Sebo here. We're going to be taking a break in just a minute. Don't forget, tomorrow we're going to be talking with Brad Worthley. ADD is a gift, not a disorder. Yes, he knows it for a fact because he has ADD. ADD, as do other members of his family. We're taking a break. We're going to be back in just a moment.
We see it every day. Courts overflowing with frivolous lawsuits. People losing all of their assets simply because they were unprepared. The best defense against unscrupulous predators and creditors is a good offense. At Corporate Direct, we use the latest legal tools to help our clients of all sizes and from all over the world create a strategy to protect what is theirs. Think asset protection is only for the wealthy? Think again. Our Cover Your Assets strategies and tools are very affordable and practical. Industry leader Corporate Direct is owned and operated by attorney and best-selling author Garrett Sutton. Give us a call at 1-800-600-1760 or go to CorporateDirect.com to see how we can tailor a CYA plan for you. That's CYA, Cover Your Assets, with Corporate Direct. 1-800-600-1760. That's 1-800-600-1760 for CorporateDirect.com.
Good health is something all of us want to have. Being aware of what we eat, its nutritional value, and how to balance our physical needs with our busy schedules is always a challenge. Amino Muscle Snack Time goes a long way towards helping us meet this challenge. Amino Muscle Snack Time is a nutritional food product that is portable, tasty, and in chewable tablet form, vanilla and honey flavors, a bonus for maintaining a healthy amino acid balance for healthy muscles. Amino Muscle Snack Time can be used anytime, anywhere, first thing in the morning to kickstart your metabolism. Take 20 minutes before or after a workout to help recover and build muscle. Take mid-morning or mid-afternoon to help curb cravings for unhealthy snacks. Weight loss, appetite control. Only top of the line and no genetically modified ingredients are used, no caffeine added. These chewable tablets can be ordered through Amazon.com or SquatSponge.com. Take charge and jumpstart your food program by adding Amino Muscle Snack Time by visiting Amazon.com or SquatSponge.com for more information. Order now.
Hi, this is Donna. Welcome back. Telephone number, if you'd like to call in and chat with me, is 888-627-6008. I wanted to share a tip with you. If you ever have a lot of stress, let's say you're at the office, you've got deadlines to meet, or you're in the car and you are just absolutely fit to be tied, you might be late for your appointment. This is a tapping suggestion that can really help to release stress, and I've used it. It works. Thump your chest. That's right. What you do is press your fingertips into your sternum. Now, that's the bone in the middle of your chest between your ribs. And firmly tap for 30 to 60 seconds. Why does this work? Why does this help to release tension? Well, there's a central point in the nervous system where, right in that area, and when the stress comes in, when you're feeling uptight, many times your breathing becomes more shallow or you're holding your breath and your muscles tense up. So it's like doing acupuncture, but you're doing it yourself. Very easy thing to remember. It also boosts circulation and speeds up the drainage of your lymphatic system. And it just really, really works. So just do some thumping. And another step that has been recommended is that if you can sort of hum, you can do this under your breath while you're doing it. And again, it's only a minute. That's all you need to do. It will make all the difference in the world. It is just absolutely so simple, so wonderful, and it really works. Also, exercise is a great stress buster, and it is something that allows the body to rejuvenate itself. And you don't have to go out and run marathons, but what you can do is just get outside, take a walk, make a change in what you're doing. If you're like so many people, you're sitting so much of the time that you don't realize that all you need to do is get up, stretch, bend over, touch your toes, do something that's going to enable the body to unwind and to release this stress. Touch your toes, stretch your arms above your head, move. It really makes a difference. And have you noticed when you're working on the computer, it's so easy to get a pain in your upper shoulders and around the bottom of your neck. Oh, I will do that sometimes. I'll be sitting at the computer, and all of a sudden I'll just go, uh-oh, time for me to get up, time for me to move. I've got to get out of this positioning, because we sort of zone out when we're working on the computer, at least I do. And then all of a sudden my muscles, I'm experiencing this burn in my shoulders and my neck muscles. And that is because, without realizing it, we're slumping forward. Our shoulders are rounding, and our heads are going forward. And the stress and strain on the body is tremendous. So if you do, like I think somebody should do, have a timer. I went to the dollar store, got myself one of these little electronic timers, and I set it for an hour. And then I make a point of getting up and out of my chair, moving, doing something that keeps those muscles relaxed, and getting back to work. Just take a minute or two. Go get yourself a cup of coffee. Do something. Move for at least 5 minutes, and then go back to work. One, you're going to be refreshed, and two, you won't get that nasty muscle burn like I was getting the other afternoon when I was working on the computer. You don't want to do that to yourself. So just a couple of tips to share with you there. Also, I wanted to share a recipe with you on a rustic apple tart. Here in the Pacific Northwest, we are known, especially in the state of Washington, for our delicious apples, and believe me, they are wonderful. This recipe is so good. It's so simple. It would be super for a dessert or even for a Sunday brunch, whenever you'd like to fix it. And we're coming into the time of year when the apples are going to be coming out really just, the flavors are just unbelievable. Now, what you're going to need is 1 1/4 cups of all-purpose flour, 1/2 teaspoon of salt, 7 tablespoons of cold, unsalted butter, and you want to cut them up into pieces. You're going to need 4 apples. Granny Smith is the best. Tart is what you want. You want apples that are tart. It's about 1 1/4 pounds, peeled, quartered, cored, sliced. It's going to come to about 4 1/2 cups. I like to keep the skin on the apple, even though it's recommended you peel them. I like to keep the skin on the apples. 3 tablespoons of unsalted butter and 1/2 cup of maple syrup. And maple syrup adds that magical flavor. This is what you do. You're going to use a food processor. You put your flour and salt in your food processor. You pulse it 5 times. Then you add those 7 tablespoons of cold butter. You pulse it about 10 times. And there will be pea-sized pieces of your unmixed butter, but you don't want large chunks. You want those little tiny pieces, seconds. That's all it takes in the processor. And then you want to take and sprinkle 3 1/2 tablespoons of cold water over your flour mixture and pulse 5 to 10 times. And the dough will start to clump together. It happens very fast. Put it on a sheet of wax paper. Take the dough out of your processor. Shape it into a ball. Then flatten it into a 6-inch disc. You want to wrap it and refrigerate the dough for at least an hour. That's taken care of. You then take 2 long sheets of wax paper on your work surface, dust it lightly with flour, unwrap your dough. If it's too stiff to roll it out, let it set at room temperature for a few minutes. Roll your dough out between those 2 long sheets of wax paper. Dust your rolling pin. You want it about 11 inches round. And then you're going to need a 9-inch tart pan with a removable bottom next to, you know, have that handy next to your wax paper. Flip your dough over and let it fall gently into the pan. Peel off the wax paper very carefully, lift the edges of the dough, and then fit it into the pan without stretching it. Cut off the excess, and you can use it to reinforce any sides of the tart that maybe are just not as strong with the pastry dough as you'd like. Prick the bottom in about 10 places with your fork, and you're going to preheat your oven to 350 degrees. And then you want to arrange the apple slices in a ring in the tart shell in a single layer. You make a second ring inside the first, basically forming like a rosette. And you want a few pieces just for the center. You take your butter, the 3 tablespoons of unsalted butter, melt it, add your maple syrup to the melted butter, and you stir it until it starts to thicken. It's going to take about 4 minutes. Drizzle half of it over the apples. And it'll just cover the apples beautifully. You put the tart in the oven for 25 minutes and then drizzle the remaining mixture, the maple butter mixture, over your apples. Bake it for another hour until the apples are softened and brown. Yum. Great with vanilla ice cream, too. Yes, and then you go out and run a 5-mile marathon. This is Donna Sebo. Have a wonderful day. Remember always, You're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. Join me tomorrow, won't you? I'd be delighted to have you again, and we'll be sharing some fabulous information. Life is a gift. Savor it, enjoy it, and don't be afraid to try new things. This is Donna Sebo. I'll talk with you tomorrow, same time, same place. Bye for now.
You've been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. We're delighted that you were able to join us and invite you to tell your friends and family about the program. Have a wonderful day.